Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Thursday, December 12th, 2019. I don't know how it ended up being the middle of December either. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two lovely panelists. One of my favorite combinations to have on the show. To start out, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Well, your favorite combination, apart from all the other combinations. Hello.
No, you're my favorite. Because Andrew likes to try and get everybody sent to HR. And Brian with the voices is pretty entertaining. I'll give him that. But this is still my primary pairing. John Martellaro is also with me today. Hi, John.
I'd be a happy person with two of my favorite people.
Aw. We love you too, John. Love him filling it.
Woohoo! You can tell it's nearly Christmas. Everyone's being nice to each other. It's nice, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, let me hand out a round of 9 a.m. eggnog and see how that changes.
hey, it's after 5 here.
Oh.
You know the rule.
It's afternoon is really all that matters anymore, I think. So actually, Charlotte, I want to start with you to talk a little bit about encryption. You discovered a sort of interesting thing that was happening both on Twitter and on Reddit with Apple.
Yeah, it's a funny one. So Apple, someone apparently tweeted out an encryption key that is meant to be an encryption key for the protected part of the iPhone. So
the secure
enclave, exactly. That is the, and so that is obviously quite a serious security risk.
Yes.
You know, foreign governments would obviously love to get their hands on such a thing. You know, various malign hackers might even be interested in that. It's not just kind of fun hobbyist jailbreakers that want this kind of information.
Right. This is on a very different level of when people used to hear about, you know, the iPhone being hacked, and really what it was somebody jailbreaking, because before you could put apps in folders, that was the thing you could do in jailbreaking that a lot of people did because they liked it. So there's right. things like that that used so, to happen, and no, this no, is on a very is... different level.
Yeah, it very much is. And as a result of that, Twitter received from Apple and confirmed by Apple a DMCA takedown notice. That's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act for all those following along at home. Now, Apple has confirmed that that request to Twitter was from them. There's mm-hmm. no dispute about that. So Twitter complied with it. They took down this tweet. Obviously, it had gone viral and whatever, but Twitter did take down the tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Except then, once that had happened, Apple said, no, actually, it's okay. We're retracting the notice. But Twitter had already complied, so Apple was like, yeah, you can put the tweet back.
All right.
Weird.
It is weird. Slightly weirder, but kind of in keeping with it all, is obviously, no surprise, this information was on Reddit as well, in, you know, various jailbreaking and hacker communities.
Yeah.
Apparently, Reddit also received a number of DMCA takedown requests. We don't know who from. So, yeah, this is what's been going on. And the admins and the moderators in one of these subreddits said they didn't have any idea who was submitting those copyright claims. Anyway, here
Charlotte,
we go.
Is it reasonable to suspect that the Apple original key was wrong? And Apple said, well, we don't need to worry anymore?
I genuinely couldn't say. If I was being cynical, I would say that it might be right, but, you know, not Apple found a way or decided that it was protected enough, that just one key didn't matter, and that the backlash from doing this was more severe and more dangerous than to the company than whatever access people could get with this key. And my understanding is it's for older iPhones as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's all a bit of a mess. Ironically, at the same time as this kind of story was breaking, yesterday Apple experts appeared in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee defending encryption.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't quite know how to end this segment because it's all a bit of a mess and all a bit confusing.
Like a lot of Apple things.
You sounded like you were worried about Apple's appearances and having a takedown request and then retracting it when they thought better of it. That doesn't
I'm not sure. I'm worried about it. I think Apple might have been. But
well, why would they? I mean, it's perfectly reasonable for Apple to issue that kind of takedown request. That's what it's meant for.
So from my background reading on this, apparently there is some objection to that. And some people say that actually encryption keys like this are not what the DMCA is for.
Oh, because they don't have a copyright on it.
That kind of thing. I confess to not being as much of an expert in American law as might be required for this discussion, but that is the reading I've got. So it's all a bit messy. Obviously, obviously the theme running through both those stories is that Apple is pro protection and pro privacy. Mm-hmm. I think I don't think I'm talking out of turn to say that's one of the things all three of us like about the company and like about our products that we buy from the company.
Yes.
But obviously that does arise some messy situations.
Mm-hmm. Now I will say, ages ago, I used to work at a company that did a lot of dealing with DMCA. Just as part of the course of business, like because of the stuff that they were doing, the DMCA was very relevant to their interests, we'll say. And it has been used by a lot of people as a very sort of blunt club, I guess, for lack of a better description. It's used for a lot of things where it doesn't necessarily need to be it's not the way to go about making that happen. And yet, because it says DMCA, like, people stress out and do whatever it is because you invoke DMCA, even if you weren't supposed to, even if it wouldn't hold up, because that's not the way that you get that thing resolved. So you do hear that regularly, but you also hear, like, in this case, there's like, we know the two things that happened, right? But we don't have sort of the third leg of that stool to make all of this stand up, which is common when it comes to Apple stuff, particularly something like this that is supposed to be secret. So that's kind of where, when I'm looking at this, that's the part that I'm looking for, is why it was okay with Apple for the tweet to be restored. Is it because that specific security key was generated by the algorithm that the Secure Enclave doesn't use anymore, or whatever? You know, like, there's a lot of reasons that this could maybe be not as big a deal as we think. And, you know, Apple just wanted to make sure it got taken down ASAP and then realized, like, oh, actually, that isn't going to make any difference to anybody or something.
I think
so they brought it back.
That's a very reasonable hypothesis, Kelly. I like it.
It sounds a reasonable hypothesis, but obviously the Secure Enclave is a very central part to Apple iPhone technology and how it goes about protecting users. Mm-hmm. So
it's so central that Google is going to implement something similar in their Pixels.
Yeah.
Is that right? That's interesting. So it can't be nothing. Now, whether it's as big a deal as they thought initially, this one key, that might be right. But I don't think we should dismiss someone potentially getting access to the Secure Enclave as a nothing.
No.
I think if there were a real issue here, I think if people were genuinely at risk, we would get a formal statement from Apple instead of just a takedown retraction.
Or an update.
This is so serious that Apple would either issue a firmware update, mm-hmm, or they would issue a public statement saying, you don't need to worry. But since none of that has happened and time has passed, I'm not taking it real seriously.
I think their statement was, you can put it back. Honestly. Like, I think them saying, go ahead and restore the tweet back to the timeline so that it wasn't, you know, sometimes you scroll through Twitter and it'll say this tweet has been deleted or whatever.
Well, you're saying that's all that needed to be done to deal with the issue?
Well, I'm saying that putting it back is their official statement. Like, this may not be as impactful as we thought.
The official statement.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is all we really need to do. If we're putting it back, then, you know, we're putting it back because it's not going to be impactful to other people. You know, it was for an older device, I think, is what I remember seeing. So there's a number of ways that this, you know, may be a smaller thing, and we may maybe we can expect something from the company later today. You know, we don't know. Because like I said, there's an extra facet of this that we don't know, like what exactly that particular key was tied to, or maybe it was a test device or some sort of emulator, you know, and they figured out like this doesn't actually go to an official iPhone hardware. Somebody was just hacking with like an emulation device. And so it turns out like this isn't going to make any difference to anybody anyway. I don't know. Security stuff is always really interesting, and the thing that has always fascinated me about a lot of security practices is how much of it is public and available, and how much you can find out about exactly how this particular security key is generated. Like, here's the ways that we do this, because even if you know how it's built, you can't go back and reverse engineer it in a lot of cases. So that's always been the thing that I always thought was kind of interesting about it. Like, As there's a whole lot of transparency and security, which is how you keep everything secure. Everybody can see how it's done. But the output of that, like, it's very easy to build a password generator and show everybody how to build a password generator that will give you a nice, long, secure password. But you can't crack that password because it's really, really long, and it's got characters and punctuation and all kinds of random stuff in it. You know, trying to fire like a brute force attack at a password that's like 40 characters long and has all kinds of punctuation and stuff in it, like, it's going to take hundreds of years for that to be broken. So, you know, you can be very transparent about what you're doing and still be very, very secure at the same time, which I think is one of the fascinating pieces of security. So the math behind it is a whole other story. I don't understand any of that, but I always think it's really interesting. So hopefully we will find out more about this. Thank you, Charlotte, for bringing this to our attention. It is interesting to me that it did vanish for a while, but then it got restored. So as always with Apple, there's more to that story, and hopefully we will hear some of it soon. With that, I'm going to talk to you for a moment about our sponsor today. Our sponsor today is Lightstream. Lightstream wants to help you refinance your credit cards and save with a credit card consolidation loan. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR if you use AutoPay. This is a whole lot lower than the average credit card of 20% APR. You can get that loan from $5,000 up to $100,000. No application or origination or transaction fees. There's not even a prepayment penalty. So if you get ahead of it, you can always just knock that off a little sooner. You can apply straight from your phone, and you may even get your money the same day you apply. Here's the part you need to know, just for my listeners, because I love all of you. You can apply now and get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/TDO. It's lightstream.com/TDO. You will get an additional discount on the interest rate if you do that. lightstream.com/TDO. And the part I have to tell you, subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/TDO for more information. And we would like to thank Lightstream for sponsoring the show today. Our second topic today, Charlotte, this is also a piece that you discovered about the Mac Pro and its cooling mechanism. And this is why John is here today. He is going to, as a rocket scientist, he's going to talk to us about cooling things.
Yes, every podcast needs a rocket scientist. No, agreed. It's a really interesting piece that I saw in came up through various links and whatever in Popular Mechanics. Obviously, as I say in the piece, the new Mac Pro, which we've discussed a fair bit this week, is a bit of a can soup it up to be a real, real beast.
Yes.
And all of that generates a lot of heat. Apple, as we know, is allergic to fan noise. And so the engineers had to come up with different ways of keeping the device cool, particularly a device that is so powerful. How did they do that? Well, it's thermodynamics, and some of the engineers spoke to Popular Mechanics, and now I'm going to hand over to our rocket scientist to actually explain it.
Well, this is an interesting article on several fronts. It's Popular Mechanics and not Physics Today, so there was a limited amount of technical information in there. There's lots of nomenclature thrown around, but they really danced around the mathematics of it. In the article, Apple engineer Lichtenberg says there's a bit of math behind it. I suppose there's a lot of math behind it because they actually have a lot of computers at their disposal. A couple of things stood out for me. One is there's been a sea change in our ability to analyze these kinds of things based on supercomputers and the speed of supercomputers and Navier-Stokes equations and the ability to simulate airflow through devices. They didn't talk about a digital simulation of airflow, but they really kind of danced around it. They used the term a bit of math behind it. They used the term a ton of analysis is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they're using ribbons and Kleenex. They talked about how they used automobile tire design and harmonics. So there's a lot more going on here in terms of mathematics and simulation than the article reveals. The point of popular mechanics is to kind of get the point across without bogging the reader down in mathematics and physics.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read these kinds of articles before, and they usually do go into a little bit more mathematical detail about what's going on. But considering the audience and who's intended to read the article and the gentle obfuscation Apple would like to wrap around their technology for trade secret purposes, I can see why the article was written the way it was.
Okay.
But we certainly have a lot more capability in terms of simulations and analysis in the most recent decade than we had before. And they allude to this. Well, I think we in the morning meeting in the article, we were talking about how in the old days you would go to a parts supplier and you would buy a fan.
Yeah.
And the fan was a $4 fan, and you'd throw it into your computer and it would have harmonics and it would be brute force. And the plastic blades were just, stamped out at, mass quantities.
Mm-hmm.
But it really takes a lot of care and a lot of engineering. And of course, for a bottom line $6,000 computer, you would expect the most sophisticated fan system on the planet Earth. And apparently it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the article goes into some details about surface area and harmonics with the blades and the way they move the air in and out and how they don't worry about filters. So they designed the components to resist having particulate matter resting on them so they don't have to drive the air through filters.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you're going to have any.
Which is great, but I've opened my share of MacBooks and I've opened my share of Apple computers and had to sort of stand back and put on some goggles so I don't get stuff in my eyes and, wave the can of air that general direction just to get the top layer off. And then, then you can worry about, what's really holding things up. So,
what's cool about those hemispherical holes is that they increase the surface area for cooling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're also bidirectional, so that no matter which way the machine is oriented, the air is still going to flow through well.
Am I remembering rightly that Apple made quite a play of at least the cooling features? It didn't go into any detail, but at the event where it unveiled mm-hmm. the Mac Pro, they did quite make a fuss about the airflow and cooling mechanism as a kind of way of reason why they brought back the cheese grater.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil Schiller is famously said to have mentioned that the 2013 Mac Pro backed them into a thermal corner.
What?
I've written about my use of it, and my machine doesn't get overly heated because I'm not stressing it as a writer, but there are people who are able to stress the 2013 Mac Pro thermodynamically, and it can't keep up. So that's because it's so small, and there's not enough space in there to do things. Like the 2019 Mac Pro with cheese grater flow and monster fans.
Interesting.
So I'm happy to see Apple return to that kind of design, actually. Wish I could afford one.
But you don't have to. We've already established that TMO is buying each of us one for Christmas, right?
Nice.
I hadn't heard that, but I'm looking forward to it.
I don't think it's possible any of us were that good this year. I'm sorry. The interesting thing to me about it is that Apple, John, like you were saying, Apple has spent a long time trying to get this stuff right. and, you know, making sure that the cooling has always been something that was a priority. You know, there are fans in Apple laptops, but they do a whole lot to make sure that you that those don't have to come on. You know,
There's a new design in the 16-inch MacBook Pro too,
with improved airflow.
Yeah,
and a keyboard that works. Yay!
Exactly. because that's, you know, yeah. It seems like we made it so you can type stuff isn't something that should be making a triumphant return to a computer in 2019. But that's just me. Maybe I'm crazy that way. What I think is interesting about this is that, you know, John, like you were saying, you used to just walk in, buy a fan, go home. I have bought my share of those fans in my life, for other things. And this is a problem that Apple doesn't have to have, aside from their known allergy to fan noise. Like, if it weren't for that, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal. This is where we are obligated to bring up the Apple Tech Note about one of the Apple computers, not a Mac, but I want to say it was like the Apple II or the Apple III, where there was a tech note about how if you were having trouble, the official troubleshooting steps from Apple were to pick it up an inch or two from the table and then let go and drop it on the table. Because
to reseat the chips.
To reseat everything so that then when you turned it on, everything would work. Because there needed to not be a fan in it.
When you guys first told me about this, I really did not believe that that was a thing that happened.
No, it's true.
And then you guys, you had to reassure me that it was actually a thing that had happened.
Yes. It is 100% legitimate. There will be a link to information regarding this particular tech note in the show notes today. I will make certain of it. I'll find something. Somebody has written about pick it up an inch from the desk. It's up there with the famous tech notes of history, like Nintendo's troubleshooting of take out the cartridge and blow on it and then put it back. Yeah.
Kelly, one of the things that wasn't mentioned in the article that also intrigued me was there was no reference to the kinds of computers they did the analysis on. Did they design the fans on a 2013 Mac Pro? Did they design the fans on a Cray supercomputer?
I would be very interested.
I would love to have heard the kinds of the computing power that they brought to bear.
And I look forward to the reply you get from Apple PR when you press them on that issue, John. I really honestly do want to know, because I feel like that's a piece of the article that's a piece of information they could give us that doesn't give away anything. Because we all know they have other computers at Apple besides Apple computers.
Talk about it. They didn't want to say that with a Mac Pro didn't have the computing power to design the fans, and they didn't want to give away any proprietary secrets. But my suspicion is that it required a computer with a lot more processing power than anything Apple builds to design the airflow for these fans, because that's a nonlinear fluid flow analysis.
Well, maybe they built the inside of the computer and they used a naked Mac Pro to design the fans for the case for the Mac Pro.
I doubt it.
I know, but it sounded good. I just like the idea of a bunch of, like, you know, slabs of supercomputers like laying on a table designing their own case. To me, that's very that's very near future science fiction, which would be a fun thing to read.
Well, years ago, Apple made a big deal about buying a Cray. It was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they were using it to design their Macs. So you don't hear much about Apple getting supercomputer time or having a supercomputer to do its analysis. If they're if they're renting time on a supercomputer somewhere, like Lawrence Livermore or Los Alamos or somewhere that they can get supercomputer time on a university, they're not talking about it. Not that I've heard.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember hearing anything about, like, I've never heard of Apple and Los Alamos in the same sentence until this moment. So
yeah, those are DOA computers that probably wouldn't sell their time to a private company anyway.
Yeah,
but they're universities that have supercomputers, probably not as powerful as the ones that DOE has.
But still, more powerful than
a lot more powerful than a Mac. Yeah. The supercomputers are talking about hundreds of petaflops, whereas the Mac Pro is something on the order of a few teraflops.
It's teraflops.
So you're talking about supercomputers being 1,000 times faster than our desktop pros.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although they are a little faster if you put the wheels on the bottom. even though the wheels are like $400. Yeah.
$400 wheels are really worth it.
But they're a lot faster that way.
Not as worth it as the 1,000-pound stand.
Well, you know. But that's for the monitor. That's not for the tower.
That's true.
Yeah, I did hear a number of people saying yesterday things about how, I own this particular brand of European sports car, so I'm not offended by paying $400 for wheels. Which I thought was a pretty interesting take. Yeah.
Well played.
I thought so. John, thank you so much for talking to us.
About
fans and stuff. And I really do want you to ask Apple PR what computing they used to design the fans, because now that you've said that, I'm really curious about what that answer would be.
Me too.
Yeah. So I look forward to your answer on a future show. Charlotte Henry, thank you for being here and squeezing this in before you go do a round of fabulous media appearances later.
Yeah, just a little bit going on today here in the UK, but thank you for having me. I always like to hear John talking about petaflops.
Don't we all? Yeah, I'm sure we'll find some catchy petaflop catchphrase we'll put on a t-shirt in the TMO merch store, and you all can show your love of John Martellaro as well. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. It has been wonderful talking to you today. If you have feedback for us, if you know more about any of these things, or if there's stuff that you want to hear us feature, you can always talk to us at observations@macobserver.com. If you like email, if you like Twitter, you can get us at TMO Daily. And if you really want to, you can leave us comments in the show notes and discuss with all the other people listening as well. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.